Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. The summer is moving quickly, and before you know it, it'll be time to report for training camp. This brand new series, which we are calling our training camp series, is designed to help you prepare for and take you through training camp. During this series, we will feature a number of FBS and FCS coaches who have all shared different ideas, processes, and thoughts on how to run and develop training camps. We try to get perspective on everything from how much conditioning to put into your players, to how they handle their installs, to how effectively communicate with players during what's really the hardest part of the entire football season. We hope you enjoy this series. Now let's send it over to today's guests. Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We continue with our training camp series. And joining me today is the offensive coordinator and offensive line coach at the University of Akron, Tommy Zagorski. Tommy, always great to talk ball with you.
Keith, always a pleasure. Excited to be on.
Well, Tommy, I'll tell you, you know, I've been really excited about your journey through the game and being across, you know, the opposite sideline in the Gold Bowl games between BW and John Carroll were always fun. But then to see you guys, you know, make your move to Tennessee Chattanooga and now get to the FBS level at the University of Akron, I think has been really exciting for guys in the Cleveland area, guys who follow you and know you guys, especially because, you know, honestly, you guys do things the right way. So it's good to see, you know, some great guys being able to make the move up the ranks in college football.
No, we appreciate it. It's always, you know, it's always a pleasure. And I think one of the things you look at is, you know, when you go out on the road and you're out recruiting in the spring or out in the fall and the winter, and you bump into guys in the OAC and you talk to guys that you coached against there. And, you know, I think everyone's kind of pulling for us. You know, we're carrying that flag. And I think every day you walk in a place at the University of Akron, you realize how special of an opportunity this really is. And it's not just us. It's not just our families. There's a lot of people that want to see us succeed. And it makes it encouraging every single day here.
Absolutely. And I got the opportunity to come out and watch you guys practice in the spring and spend a day with you guys. And I mean, I can honestly say, like, it is a great place and it's a great thing you guys are doing. And, you know, in a lot of ways, anytime a new staff comes in, it is restarting the program. So certainly there will be those baby steps here in the beginnings of things. But just from everything I saw, I mean, like I said, you guys do things the right way. And that's going to pay off. And then on top of it, you know, I think Akron's a little bit of a hidden gem when you look at what you guys have in terms of the facility, the campus, all those things. You know, you don't hear about that a lot. And I know you guys have done an excellent job here right in the beginning, just locking down your backyard and making sure that you're taking care of the players and coaches in the area.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the biggest things that was kind of cool this spring was having, you know, different coaches like yourself and different people from other institutions have the opportunity to come in and meet with us and watch practice. And, one of the big takeaways I had, Larry Williams, our athletic director, who played for the Cleveland Browns and is an O-line guy. So, you know, he kind of watches me a little bit more than everybody else on the field. And it's always good to have him doing that. And, you know, one of the things I think a takeaway he said was just kind of the difference in the amount of people in the area that have been here and had the opportunity to feel kind of welcome here at the University of Akron. And it really is a special place from the facilities, the location, to the academic opportunity and the internships that our young men can achieve here at the University of Akron. It really, really makes this a special place and hopefully somewhere that we can build and grow and make a significant change in college football.
And for you, it has to be kind of neat being a Cleveland boy, growing up on the east side of Cleveland, going to Benedictine High School, playing at Case Western, and, you know, then coaching locally, college ball in the area. I mean, for a long time, you were just Cleveland. That was the life you knew, and then you guys made the move to Tennessee, and you got out of the area. But, you know, I think for you, it has to be pretty neat, a similar experience to mine, just being able to grow through the ranks and be able to stay in one area to see it done. I mean, you get to know all the people there, and I think you'd agree, especially with where you're at right now. This is a profession that's all about the relationships.
100%. And I, you know, realistically, I would not be where I'm at today at the University of Akron if it were not for, you know, the relationships I grew, you know, starting playing football at, you know, St. Anne's and Jesu on the east side of Cleveland, you know, two of the perennial CYO programs, and you get a chance to play there and compete there. Then you go to a storied-rich program like Benedict, and day one, I step foot into the locker room, and I'm met by the legendary Auntie Basu, who left us in 2008, but truly is one of the greatest human beings probably ever to walk this earth. And, you know, that doesn't even get to scratch the surface of how incredible coach he was, you know, to have, you know, 300-plus wins as a high school football coach and just kind of doing things the right way. And I always find, you know, I find myself every office I've ever had as a coach, I have two pictures of Coach Basu that I keep in there. And people always look at me and go, is that your grandpa? And I go, no, it's my football grandpa. And I always say that because he just was such a powerful impact in my life as a man of Catholic faith, also a man that just did things the right way. And then to have, you know, Art Bortnick as my head coach and to be coached by Pat Conahan and Joe Chabon, who were great line coaches as well there. And then have the, you know, the privilege to go to an outstanding academic institution like Case Western Reserve. You know, I really think you learn a lot from a lot of different people and a lot of different walks of life. And that's one of the things at Benedictine that really helped me is recruiting. You know, I got my huddle with guys that, you know, lived on the west side, the east side, the south side. It didn't matter where they were at. We all came together for one common goal. And I think when you can get that together on a football field, it's truly special. And, you know, being home, being able to recruit Northeast Ohio, being our, you know, our Northeast Ohio recruiter, going into the Akron and Canton schools, and being able to go into Cleveland, it's really special. And, you know, for me, it means a lot, and it means a lot to my family to be back home and to be coaching Division I football here. And, you know, one of the things that I tried to strive on when I left John Carroll to go to the University of Tennessee in 2015 was have the opportunity to still kind of have an Ohio footprint. And then going to Eastern Kentucky University with Mark Elder, Mark gave me the entire state of Ohio, which people go, that's kind of a daunting task. Saying, no, it's a great state with great coaches that want to learn, that want to get better, with players that are prepared when you get them coming out of high school. And they're guys that know how to win. And I think that's really, really special for us. And that kind of helped us build up the program at Eastern Kentucky as well. And then joined Tom this past the end of the fall at Chattanooga, and then out here at Akron.
It's been a heck of a journey for you, and still excited to watch you, because I think, you know, you guys are on a great trajectory here just as a coaching staff. And I think the other thing really that I enjoyed about my visit to you guys was the camaraderie of your staff, just the way you guys operated with each other, worked together, communicated together, you know, and you guys were great. You gave me all access set in on all your position meetings, all your coaches meetings, et cetera. So I really got to see firsthand how important that chemistry is. And I know it's not that way everywhere. I know, hey, it's, you know, in our profession, there's a lot of alpha males. So sometimes egos get in the way, but you guys really set that all aside and get your work done.
Yeah. It starts with Coach Arth. You know, you talk about humility. And, you know, one of the things about Coach Arth is, you know, the first time I met him when I was in grade school, he was a senior at Ignatius. I remember meeting him, and he was just such an inviting person. And I go, wow, this guy's a quarterback at St. Ignatius High School, and he's such an inviting guy. And then have the opportunity to know him at John Carroll and then coaching with him. And after his time in the NFL, it never changed him. And I think with that standpoint, sometimes guys walk in with a certain logo and a certain, you know, different opportunities they've had that may change them. It never changed him. And I think that's the thing that you look at with him, and it starts with him. And I think we all draw towards that. And we all realize that, you know, we're all pulling in the same direction. And all of us have maybe some different interests outside of football, but our common goals here are we're humble in what we do. We want to develop these young men to the best of their God-given ability. And then we also want to win football games. And I think you put those three things together and everyone pulls that direction, it just makes the working environment that much more enjoyable and a pleasure to come to the office every day.
Well, that really brings us up to the point where we are right now. You're making final preparations here and enjoying a little time off as you start to roll into preseason camp here. And it's a very important time. It's different than, you know, spring ball. There's definitely now a focus. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. We got an opponent sitting out there in week one. So, you know, there's that sense of urgency now that goes into camp. So as you begin this and, you know, you bring in a recruiting class here too. So it's more than the guys you work with in the spring. You know, what's the focus in those very first days, that first meeting where you sit down with the offensive unit and, you know, establish this is what we're going to be about. What's the message that you guys give to your players?
You know, I think the battle cry for our entire program is, you know, we talk about our way. And the way that we perceive is a little different than everybody else. You know, we're going to expect our guys to learn a true offensive system. And, you know, from the way that our plays are, you know, a certain amount of words or whatever it may be, it tells you exactly where you need to be aligned. It tells you exactly what you need to be doing and at what time. And I think that's important, is just those building blocks of understanding, you know, really the offense itself. And I think when our guys come into the program, you know, sometimes they open up our playbook for the first time and they, you know, they see a dice right open and they're like, well, wait a second, what is it? It's too much. You know, you start going through the different, you know, verbiage that coincides with it. And they go through it at first. They're like, okay. And then we add more and we add more and we add more. And realistically, we tell our guys at the beginning of camp, it's going to be mentally, you know, exhausting. It's going to be physically exhausting. And it's really going to challenge you every single day. And if we don't do that, we're not maximizing the time we have here at camp with our guys. And that's why you spend so much time as a staff making sure that everything is in a line when we go through our installs, to make sure that it makes sense, to make sure there's a progression to it, to kind of help our, you know, positions, you know, every position across the board, not just, you know, the quarterback, not just the offensive line, not just the running. I think sometimes when you get into that, you know, you look at it through a scope where it's a quarterback scope, where it's a running back scope, or whatever scope it may be. You know, sometimes it changes it a little bit. But for us, we try to put it together where it's everybody understanding what their point and purpose is in this offense and kind of pushing in that direction.
You yourself handle a very important position with the offensive line, and I certainly see a great dovetail in being the offensive coordinator, too, and being able to understand the needs of what you guys are doing up front with protection and the run game. But you also then coordinate all those other coaches who are a part of that and got some great guys on your staff there. For you, how do you manage that side of it? What's the expectations for those assistants as – you know, you guys sit down, you put your install together, and then certainly they come up with their plans to execute. How do you guide those guys through being able to install this offense together?
You know, that's the biggest thing, is just making sure that we have faith in each other. And I think that's the, you know, one of the things that, you know, Tom looks for and I look for when we're hiring guys here, is to make sure we're hiring guys that we can trust. And what I mean by that is, you don't want the whole team the offense is going to get a presentation, you know, and have an offensive voice. But realistically, you also have to have faith that our coaches, when they take those guys in their individual meeting rooms here, those guys are prepared to practice and are prepared to play. And I think one of the things you look at is that our guys, each coach has kind of a different flavor. Each guy comes from a different background. We've got guys that have coached in the MAC here. We've got guys that were high school coaches. The biggest thing about all those guys, they're all really good teachers. And when you have great teachers around you, it allows you the opportunity to kind of build on it. And I think when we put together the playbook, we're going through different things, you know, maybe I'll have an idea of what I want to put down verbiage-wise, but then, you know, we'll have another position coach that'll say, hey, you know, I'd like you to say this, I'd like you to say that, and they'll explain why, and it makes more sense, you know, through their perspective. And I think I learned that early in my life at Benedict, and I was a math tutor. And I remember I had a math teacher who was my algebra teacher, Mr. DeGeronimo. He's still there. I think he's been teaching for like 40 plus years or something. It's insane. But I think when the school closes, he'll probably retire. But Mr. D, he taught me in math class that he said, you know, y plus mx plus b, you know, that's the slope formula. But to get to that slope formula, not everybody's going to do it the same way. And I think that's important. At the end of the day, we got to make sure our guys are getting there together, but also being able to have the coaches have their own sense of ownership of their rooms, and how they're going to articulate it, and how they're going to push their guys and motivate their guys every single day. And we're really blessed with a great staff here, with guys with great experiences, and have Tom Pritchard quarterbacks is outstanding, but also having the opportunity to have a Chris Cook in the tight end room, Jaden Everett in our running backs room, and then Brian Gasser, who's our passing coordinator and also works with our wide receivers. You know, the experiences those guys have and then bringing those to the table really, really rounds it out for us, and it really makes it a special operating unit.
With those guys, you certainly count on them to, in their individual periods, put together drills and execute drills that are going to really make a difference to how your offense operates. It's essentially, you know, when I look at individual offense, I feel like it's not we're just going to go out there and work drills and skills that are – not tied directly into what we're doing, that we're looking at essentially being able to get more repetition and focus without all the other moving parts around us, yet still drill all the things that we're going to need, everything from that footwork or hand placement or throwing mechanics, et cetera, but still at the same time have all the decision-making part of that layered in so that there is that tie-in. You know, I think you have to be efficient with time, and if you have guys out there just running drills that aren't tying in, you know, you're not being as efficient as possible. So for you guys, you know, what's – and I saw it in camp. I guess I want you to talk through it, but I could definitely see that there's kind of a – whether it's formal or informal, kind of a formula for how you guys are going to go through individual and build to your team periods. And you guys do it in all phases of the game. So I know it's something that's coming from the top, but offensively, what's that look like for you guys?
You know, realistically for us, it's maximizing situational football. And, starting from the get, usually I think everyone in America starts their first and 10, start off their camp, and that's where we'll start. And, you know, with that, you know, looking at the individual and breaking up our practices to the point where, you know, are not killing our guys, because, you know, with sports science now, you got to decide, you know, how many hours can those guys be on their feet? You know, how long can they stay locked in? What are they doing? You know, maximizing that time that we're with them. And we give these individual period times. But I think that's really important to utilize and hone in on that. And I always look at, you know, the definition of skill. It's an acquired. You acquire skills. No one's born with skills. No one has skills. No guy came out of the womb and learned how to, you know, block a three technique, and was able to just do that. That's a skill that you have to acquire, and then you have to hone in on that through repetition. And I think that there are guys doing a really good job of understanding those building blocks as day one. If you're running an out route, you know, how are we getting to that? You know, what way do we have our players? So when you come to team, and I think it always as an assistant, you take a lot of pride in your position room. Like when you get to team as a unit, you want to make sure that you guys are prepared to execute when we're going against a defense or when we're going a 9-on-7 or a 7-on-7 or whatever it may be. You take a lot of pride in that, in those guys. And I think that you understand as a coach that you have to have those guys ready to go, whatever that given play is, whatever that given set of plays is that day. What are the little skills that I can articulate and execute with those guys that allows them to perform the best of their God-given ability? And a lot of that has to do with us doing crossover as well, you know, doing individual with the other side of the football. So there's times where we'll get together with the defensive line and do individual where people go, oh, wait, why would you do that? And it's like, well, they're way better at the defensive line than a walk-on guy standing there holding a bag or trying to demonstrate for me what we really are trying to get out of that four technique or whatever it may be that we're working on. So I think that's a big part of it. And it's just, you know, as you go through it, that's really where we're at right now. The meetings that we're in leading up to this, we spend a lot of time on our individual, making sure that it's the right drills, making sure that it builds on itself, and really taking advantage of those opportunities every time we hit the grass. And I think as you go do that, it allows your whole program to really be in line, and it helps you, you know, look at different things. You know, anytime I get a crossover drill, I get to see the way the D-line's teaching something. It also allows me the opportunity to go, okay, well, that makes more sense. And meeting with those guys prior to these meetings, it kind of allows me to think, well, how can we hone in on our craft a little bit better and vice versa for them? And I think we do that across the board.
I know when I look at the individual time allotted in practice, it's always been – and I've been, you know, with the offensive line coach who's asking for it, and I've been the offensive line coach asking for it. You're always looking for more fundamental time. And I think certainly I understand that. I think that part, especially for people who aren't close to the game, man, the offensive line may be one of the most skill-focused positions out there. I mean, so much technique, and you know, a step that's 2 inches wrong can cause some pretty bad things to happen. So it's a lot about making sure you drill those fundamentals. So as you're looking at that, I know you probably have to be a little creative, as all offensive line coaches are, with where you get some of that extra time. So you know, for you, what's in general, I guess, the framework of how you're going to create your you know, individual practices to work those fundamentals, and where are you going to steal time?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we get these walkthroughs now. That, you know, now the college football has banned the two-a-day. Yeah. You know, you get these walkthroughs where you have the opportunity to practice. And then before that, it's 2 45-minute practice where you're going to go through, you know, whatever it may be, you know, add special teams at the top of it. And then you get, you know, let's say you get offense for 40 minutes or 45 minutes, whatever it may be. Taking advantage of that one-hour walkthrough that the NCAA grants us, you get a chance during that to also introduce more of your footwork. And I think one of the big things, if you walk in our line room, we've got it posted everywhere. Every corner's got a drawing of the different steps that we take. And we call it our step tree. And I started doing this back when I was at John Carroll, when I first became an O-line coach. I looked at our feet. I would watch film, and our feet were just sloppy. And I'm like, how do we get our feet, our footwork better? And guys got so excited, and I was guilty of this too. I remember being a player, and I always thought, you know, being physical and being intense was, you know, lunging, you know, just going to attack a guy. And I think sometimes you get guys that want to do that. But realistically, you know, it's a dance to get there. And I think, you know, you look at the receiver, they run their different route tree and going through that. And what we kind of incorporated here was a step tree that we've kind of refined throughout the years. But realistically, for our guys, every day that they step foot on the field, they're going to do that. And the reason I have them do that is it's a way to warm up. It gets them in and out of their stance. And it gives you an opportunity to understand that those 6 inches of greatness are so imperative to our success as a football program. You know, nothing's worse than, you know, dropping a three technique on a deuce, and you're trying to work up on that at that second level, and you drop that three technique, and you come back and you watch the film, and you go, it's because of our footwork. Nothing drives you crazier than understanding that your footwork is what held you back. And I think that's an important part of it. And as you go to do that every single day, you know, you talk about skill. You know, the legendary Howard Mudd said there's nothing that he hates more than when he hears it. He calls me the quote unquote athlete skill. He goes, we all have skills. And there's nothing more skilled than playing on the offensive line. So I tell our guys that every day. We've got to make sure that we hone in on those skills and acquire them. So we always do that. The other thing that we're always working on is flexibility. There is not a day that our guys step foot on the turf where they're not getting hurdles. So when our guys walk onto the field, they're going to go through a hurdle circuit before they even start practice. And the reason we do that is it loosens our guys up. And I just think that nowadays, you know, nobody's picking. Nobody's running over to the offensive line. No kid, when they're coming up, growing up in this sport, you know, the first day that they play this sport, they're like, man, I really hope they pick me to play left guard. Like, every kid wants to hold the football and do different things. So I think it's important for guys to look at, you know, how do I become a better bender? You know, not a waist bender, become more of a hip bender and a knee bender so that I can be more athletic. Because realistically, I mean, the tradition and the way that this sport is going, you know, the throw game has become so sophisticated in the last 20 years that we're going to be so much more in space with pass protection and being against people that are more athletic than us. And how do you utilize that technique and skill to give yourself a chance where you can actually protect and keep that quarterback upright? So, you know, those are two things I think that we do every single day with our guys. Just the work that, I mean, those are, you know, your EDDs, and then you got other EDDs that you work into it. But those are two that we do off the field. And then our guys during skill development in the offseason, nothing gets me more excited when I walk into the indoor and I see a group of our guys out there doing hurdles or doing their step tree because they understand the importance of that. And I think as they buy into that and they understand it, it just helps them that much more.
Yeah, I think that's something I see really being pushed down from guys at your level all the way through is that idea of year-round skill development. And I'm excited about that. Like, even, you know, to break away from our conversation for a minute, you know, it's been a while with how the NCAA has been scaling back on what the camp schedule looks like. And so now there are no more two-a-days. And, you know, I know of high schools who probably like a decade ago, I remember, you know, Ron Johnson was at Camp McKinley, had eliminated two-a-days. And I thought, man, you're crazy. How are you doing that? And, you know, I think when you can step away from the idea of I got to do exactly the same as everybody else or we're going to get behind, you start to realize that it's not a bad thing. Because, you know, I could think back to, and I'm sure you can relate to this, you know, it's not that, like, football coaches are in love with two-a-days. I could remember those being some of the most miserable days at camp for a number of reasons. Number one, I lost my walkthrough time. Number two, I did not have as much film and classroom time. And three, there was usually that quick turnaround where you could, you know, you're grabbing lunch, maybe looking at the previous practice, and you feel like by the end of the day that as a coach you got behind. So I mean, I welcome those changes. I think it's also good, you know, hey, you don't want to sharpen the sword dull, right? You have to be aware of what's going on with these athletes' bodies, and I think we become more attuned with that. What are your thoughts on, you know, I guess the current format? You have to live with it, so it doesn't matter, but, you know, thoughts on how that's evolved here over the last few years?
I'll tell you, I think it's really well. I think it's good for our sport, and I think it's helping us create a safer working environment for our players. And, you know, you look at injuries and things of that nature that happen. A lot of those injuries happen because of fatigue. You know, you look at guys dropping their head and hitting with the crown of their head. A lot of that happens because they're tired, you know, or different pulls or strains you may have. You know, I remember, you know, practicing at Case Western Reserve. It was, you know, you had the 2.5 hours, and then, you know, after that there was a break where you weren't allowed to see your coaches, and then our coaches would have another practice for 2.5 hours. Well, where are you getting the correction time? Where are you getting the opportunity, like you said, to walk through? Where are you getting the chance to correct what's going on? I mean, if I became a chef and I'm trying to make a pizza, and when I go to make the pizza, every time I go to make the pizza, I don't have cheese or pizza sauce. Well, I don't know, like, and I'm not figuring out where I'm getting it from. I'm probably not going to be a really good chef. And I think when you do that, you got to give yourself the opportunity to correct things and to teach and to educate kids on what the next step's going to be as a program. And right now, the way it's set up with the walkthrough and then the practice, it really gives you a chance to hone in on coaching. It gives you the chance to watch film as a staff. It gives you the chance to maximize your hours of the day. And I always thought as a coach, when we did the two-a-days, when they got it to the mandate and it was every other, I got more out of those days where we didn't have a double
yes.
than the days we did have a double. The days of the doubles was almost like, oh, wait a second, we got to make sure that we're a mentally tough football team. We can be able to push through this and do this and do that. And it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, kids are going to drop out. We're going to find out who they are. But also, you get the, you know, if you're out there on the field, you know, for 5 hours in a day, it's not realistic. We don't play football for 5 hours.
No.
It's just not like, we don't have that. I mean, the NCAA just changed the overtime rule this year because of that as well. You know, now that you go for a 2-point conversion, I think after 3 overtimes or 4 overtimes, I forget how they articulated it, but it's like they changed that this year because, you know, the biggest thing is we're trying to get people off the field, trying to make sure that we're maximizing, you know, what they can do. And I think realistically, as you look at it, it helps us teach better. And I can't stress that enough, is that if you're not teaching and you're just out there just kind of doing stuff, like, why are you doing it? And I think sometimes that's what got into it, is that you go into that second practice, and that second practice would be, you know, your old school Oklahoma drill, or maybe some way of doing, you know, some kind of, you know, gut-wrenching drill that challenged guys and articulated whether or not our guys were strong enough or were quote-unquote man enough to take that next step. And I think really that mental toughness really comes from, can I be locked in a walkthrough? Can I be locked in when I come in for breakfast at 7 in the morning? Can I be locked in when I go into meetings? Can I be locked in when I go through that walkthrough, where that walkthrough isn't as physically grueling, but it's also mentally grueling? Can I be locked in and understand what's my footwork? What's my aiming point? What am I doing as an athlete to be able to execute in the afternoon when you have that practice and hit the field? And then also being mentally locked in to come back in the afternoon to be able to do that. I think that takes a tremendous amount of mental toughness. And especially in our generation now, you know, everyone talks about they blame the phones, they blame, you know, the now there's this millennial generation of what they're doing, but, you know, realistically, it's hard. It's hard to stay locked in. I don't know. I don't know about you, but me, I mean, it's hard for me to stay locked in that long. So if we can get our guys to do that, it really only allows us to build that mental toughness that we used to in our quote-unquote two-a-days and doubles, but also teaching at a higher level and giving the opportunity to make those corrections so that we can put the best product on the field.
Yeah, I think, you know, we just, and again, it's part of the tradition of our game, right? We grow up a certain way. We do it a certain way. Honestly, probably until there's some, you know, changes forced upon us, we didn't think about maybe some of the why behind it. I know a lot of forward-thinking coaches have. I know, you know, at your level, you know, a lot of that has happened. But, you know, when you think of the old traditional two-a-day, when I went to Ohio Northern, it was actually 3. I mean, you talk about brutal, you know, the player side of it, it's not the focus being, I'm going to lock in, I'm going to stay, you know, mentally focused on all these things. It's like, man, I just need to survive today. And that's not what we want to train into our players. We're not trying to survive a football game. We're trying to stay locked in for 4 quarters. As fatigue sets in, you still want to stay locked in. We don't want to get in a survival mode, because we don't attack anymore, right? You're just weathering the storm. That's not really the mentality that we want to train. Yet, when you look at the old model, that's exactly what we were training.
Absolutely. And that's it. I mean, like, no one looks up at the scoreboard, and as a player, I don't think I ever looked up at the scoreboard and said, all right, there's 3 minutes, 27 seconds left in the game. We got a 2-touchdown lead. Okay. All right. We're in a 4-minute offense situation. You know, I'm not looking up at the clock going, all right, here we go. Can I do this? Am I going to be mentally tough enough to finish this game and do things like that? Like you said, I mean, it was, you got through it. And as a player, I remember that multiple times at K-Swiss Reserve trying to be, all right, we get through this. Whenever you start thinking that way, or you start articulating that, like, we got to get through this, it's what's the benefit? Like you said, and I think it's important that we're executing and we're attacking everything that we can do. And when we limit that amount of time on the field, it gives you that opportunity to do that. And I think that's imperative for us in our success and as a sport going forward. No parent wants to say, well, what did you do? Well, I survived another day, mom and dad. You know, I during camp, I'll tell our guys, hey, call somebody and thank them for the opportunity to play this magnificent sport. And hopefully when they call them, they'll say, hey, I'm surviving. You know, I want to be thriving. I want to be growing. I want to be developing. You know, I want to be able to, you know, challenge myself. I tell our guys every day, but you walk on that field, make sure when you come off it, you're better than when you got there. It might be 1%, it might be 2%, but you're better for the opportunity to practice. And if you're not doing that, then maybe it's time to find another sport. You know, I think Dan Hawkins always said there's always going to be murals, brother. So you can always go do that, I guess, if you're that inclined.
Well, the last part of this, and really, I think this is key for the Zips here as you guys approach, you know, year one of this, you know, getting into the evaluation part. And, you know, it's informal, it's formal, but you got to figure out who's our best 11 guys to put on the field, and not just skill-wise, but them playing together. So for you, both as the offensive line coach and as the offensive coordinator, what does the evaluation process look like? What are the things that you're really going to focus on here to determine who's on the field in week one?
You know, I think realistically it starts in spring. You know, it starts with spring ball. And one of the things the challenge we issued our guys before the spring started, when we got here, you know, Coach Arts made a very, very good point. He told our guys, I'll learn everything I need to know about this program, how we finish the semester academically in the spring. And one of the things we're really proud of, we had over 2.9 this spring from a 2.42 that they had in the fall. And it just showed it, and it was the same guy. It was classes that they had taken. It was showing that their grit. You know, their stick-to-itness, their want to. And I think you look at that, that's the first telltale sign for us. And that's like we did the spring football. And you get into spring football, and you get to watch guys, and you get to evaluate guys. You get to see the way the guys that, you know, are kind of assimilating into the culture that we're cultivating every single day, giving themselves the opportunity to also understand the offense, understand how they're going to execute. And as you said, you know, the 11 pulling together, as much as I love coaching the offensive line, as much as I know the importance of the offensive line, it starts with the guy under center. It does. It starts with the guy under center. It's a quarterback-driven sport. It's why everybody, the day one I alluded to earlier, they all want to play a spot where they have the ball. And everyone wants to be the quarterback. And when you're growing up and you're playing CYO, usually the coach's son's the quarterback, or whoever it may be. The best athlete might be the quarterback, or even at the high school level, or even up here at the collegiate level. And even now you see like the Cam Newtons of the world in the NFL level, there's guys that are the best athletes on the field are playing that sport, playing that spot. And when you get to that position and you get to that, you know, who's the guy that's going to make our guys go? And one of the privileges we have here, we huddle. So when you get in the huddle and you get the opportunity to do that, those guys run into the huddle. You can tell who's taking command of that huddle and who's not taking command of that huddle. And that's going to help push us as a program. And that's going to be able to have all those guys gravitate towards them. You know as well as anybody, you've had talented players that you've been around that maybe didn't have the opportunity to pull guys with them, and vice versa. You had guys that maybe weren't as talented as the other guy, but the rest of the 10 guys, they pushed for that guy. And they said, we'll do everything in our power to make him the best possible player he can be. So it starts with the quarterback evaluating him in that standpoint. And then also making positive plays, you know, not turning the football over, you know, getting the opportunity to push the football downfield, making the right check downs, making them have the opportunity to do everything he's supposed to be as that leader and that cerebral giant that we need at that position to make us go as a unit. And then, you know, when you look at the guys at every other position, it's you know, is that the best guy to help us? And I think on the offensive line, you know, every offensive line coach in America would nod their head listening to this. They would say, you know, you want to play your best five. That's why you mix guys up all the time. You know, and you have a guy that's playing center. You got a guy that maybe your left tackle is taking reps at right tackle, and then your right tackle is taking reps at center or guard or whatever it may be. Just being able to have it where, if God forbid somebody does go down, that's your best player, you can be able to plug and chug with your best available player. And then when you get to the perimeter guys, the biggest thing is, like, who are our playmakers? Who are the guys that have shown that they can make plays in tough situations? And then when it comes to those tough situations, how do you get them the football? You know, and that's one of the biggest things we try to always do is, I think with formationally, the way that we call our formations, the way that we call our offense, it gives us the opportunity to put our best playmakers in the best possible playmaking opportunities that allow them to maximize that potential. And then when you do that in practice, you'll see the guys that execute and go through that. And certain guys, you know, different places you've been, you know, certain guys, maybe they call themselves game time guys. Well, I don't always agree with that. Now, I will tell you this. When I was at Tennessee in 2015, we had Josh Dobbs, our quarterback for the Steelers now. You know, Josh was a good practice player. He was a great Saturday player. When the light hit his skin just the right way, he would elevate his game to a level that you were just like, oh my God, that's him. That's what he does. And I think you look at that, and there's different guys, you know, that different guys in our program. I tell our guys this all the time, but, you know, I look at, you know, they go, Coach, you got the Coach Alvin Kamara. And I go, yeah, I was on the same staff as that Alvin Kamara played on at Tennessee. And I go, they said, what was great about Alvin? I go, Alvin was the same kid on Saturdays that he was during the week. He brought the same lunch pail every single day. And you see that. There's no reason why we see the success he's having with the New Orleans Saints and you know, doing what he's doing. You know, it's because he works at it and because he drives himself and he pushes himself to be that much better. And I think when you look at our guys here, there are guys in our program that now throughout the summer have become better leaders, are taking their, you know, the next step as a program and really are, you know, honing in on their skills while also bringing guys along with them. And we can get that ready to go, and you can be a roster where you're 2 to 3 deep, especially in this conference, to have that opportunity. You can be a really, really successful football team.
Tommy, you've done a lot of great stuff, as we mentioned, throughout your career. You've learned a lot from some great people along the way. But as you look at what you do as a coach and what you do to make your guys successful, what's the one thing you would really point to that helps your guys find the winning edge?
I tell you what, and this is going to sound corny, to let them know I love them. I mean, realistically, I don't think there's a group of guys I've ever coached. If they had to describe 4 words and they were like, hey, Coach Z does this because he loves us. And I think when you know that somebody loves you and has the utmost faith in you, you're just going to perform that much better. And I truly believe that. And I think that there's the old adage where, like, you know, hey, you got to keep them, you know, honest, keep them level-headed. But, you know, if you love your son or you love your daughter as a parent, you know, the same thing is you want to let them know, you know, every single day that you're encouraging them, you're allowing them to have the opportunity to perform whatever the given task can be to the best of their God-given ability. And you don't have to tell them you love them every day, but let your actions do that as well. And I think that's really imperative. If you do that, your group of guys as an offense, as an offensive line, as a football program, they're going to pull together and they'll respect that. And it'll only help them embrace their role that much better, knowing that you love your role, knowing that you love them, and knowing that they're going to love the process, you know, throughout. So I think it's really imperative.
Well, Coach, you guys are doing some great things there. Coaches, follow these guys. Definitely worth watching. On Twitter, it's Akron Coach Z. Tommy, excited for you guys. Look forward to seeing the University of Akron compete in 2019, and I'll definitely be out there to catch some Zips games.
Appreciate it. Looking forward to you, and thanks again for the opportunity. Go Zips.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEV Coach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year-round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis, articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.